Music in Booze with Mo is produced and distributed by Eats Drinks TV, a service of the Center for Culinary Culture, home of the Cocktail Collection, and First Reel Entertainment, and is available wherever fine podcasts can be heard. The Center for Culinary Culture, telling the story of food and drink, one taste at a time. Welcome to Music and Booze with Mo. I'm Mo Herms, and I've worked in the music industry most of my life, so have met some pretty amazing musicians over the years. I also love a good cocktail, and I've encountered some really interesting bartenders as well. It seems that there is a lot of crossover, so when I can, I like to talk to musicians and bartenders about music and booze. Join us at the bar, won't you? Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you by Barkeeper, a head shop for cocktail lovers, located at 614 North Hoover Street in Silver Lake, Los Angeles. Stop by for barware, vintage glassware, a carefully curated collection of spirits, and one of the most impressive selections of bitters anywhere. Follow them on Instagram and Facebook for information regarding spirits tastings. That's barkeepersilverlake.com. And also in the Virgil Village neighborhood of Silver Lake, Los Angeles. I made it to New Orleans again, and I got to talk to Kimberly Patton Bragg, who is kind of a superstar, a former Florida goth who went to New York to pursue acting dreams in musical theater, and came to New Orleans, found herself a member of the Imbibe 75 for 2022, and, you know, really, she just likes slinging drinks. So let's sit in a wonderfully vibrant, meaning noisy bar in New Orleans and talk with Kimberly Patton Bragg, otherwise known as KPB.
They're going to need more chairs if they're going to put a baby on. Oh, yeah. So I think we're okay.
Perfect. I think we're good.
We always start, introduce yourself, tell us where you work.
I'm Kimberly Patton Bragg, otherwise known as KPB, and I'm the bar director at Palm and Pine.
At Palm and Pine in New Orleans.
In New Orleans.
And how long have you been at Palm and Pine?
I've been there about a year and a half. So.
And how long has it been around?
It's been open since 2019, I came onto the team after quarantine when I was ready to come back into the world.
Yeah, it was a very weird time.
I got very lucky to get a job there because I always loved to eat there anyway.
Where were you before that? Because I think you're talking about my friend Brad, and he's like, oh yeah, is this her last
place? I've been all over the place. So I've worked over at Justine, I've worked over at Latitude 29, worked in a few of the hotels, you know, all that kind of stuff. So
well, I think probably what's important is when did you start?
Wow.
What got you into it? Because you are an Imbibe 75 for 2022.
I don't know how that actually happened.
Somehow, you are enough on the radar of people as like an amazing beverage director, person behind the bar.
I appreciate that. I've been around long enough. I've gotten pretty much everyone drunk at this point. So
now they're all like, she was nice to us and we almost threw up at her.
Oh, she keeps my secrets. It's okay.
So when did you start that?
God,
when did you get on this crazy ride?
I've been bartending on and off for about 20 years. So, I would say when it really started getting, especially into craft and stuff like that, I initially was a manager and buyer of a toy store in Soho. And that had been there for like 20 years, and then it sadly closed because Soho.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, well, I got to do something. I worked at another toy store for a while. And then I decided I really wanted to focus on the acting a little bit more and everything. So what do? You go back into the restaurant industry. So, yeah, I was a theater major because I make.
Know you did the acting.
Yeah, I make great career decisions. So I went from fashion design to theater. So,
oh my God.
Yeah.
All of that is amazing.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah. Oh, even worse. In fashion design, millinery was my specialty. So, yeah, because hat making, it's...
You would not be the first hat maker that I've ever met, honestly.
I will take that and like it. So, anyway, so I got a job at Blue Smoke and Jazz Standard in New York. And initially a waitress, and they immediately put me behind the bar.
Yeah, just why? They were just like, you got...
Just to get I have the personality for it, and, you know... And I loved it. So, and that's also when craft bartending really, really started. You know, Flatiron Lounge had just started.
Yeah, I was gonna say it was
employees
early
2000s. Only. Yeah, all that kind of stuff. So, I really decided that I really liked the process and the fun and definitely the money. This pays better than Shakespeare. And I've got a different stage all the time. I don't have to deal with, you know, all the auditioning and the head games that it plays with you, and not as much about body image. I mean, nowadays you have to give headshots to, you know, work in certain bars now.
They do that now, don't
it's
they?
Really gross.
That's so weird. Well, I mean, again, I live in Los Angeles.
I know.
There are headshots
it's
everywhere.
It's usually the major markets, and it's just kind of a sneaky way to, you know, find out how old you are, how much you weigh, what race you are, you know, all that kind of stuff. I think it's just kind of gross.
It's kind of weird. But yeah. That's not a problem here in New Orleans.
No, no.
Well, this is also a community
we let it
where everybody knows each other anyhow, right?
Oh, yeah. It's a very incestuous world here. I mean, it always is in the bar community in general. I mean, we know that just with tails. You know, it's a big family reunion every year.
Exactly.
And then, except everybody is the drunk uncle.
So, it's our turn.
It's our turn to shine?
To stumble. It's our turn to stumble.
Exactly.
To be okay with it. So when you started the craft side of it, you were saying, you know, all the fancy stuff was starting to happen. What was it that made you say, you know what? I can make cool drinks like this. I can invent and create.
Well, I got really lucky with... the bar manager at the time, when she got promoted to bar manager, Tanika Green, her and I really got into it along with our friend Jolene who worked there. And we started a blog when people blogged called The Broad Palette. Get it with broads, we get about so cheesy.
I had a blog too.
Yeah, exactly. So we really, you know, we would meet once a week and we would start creating drinks and syrups and, you know, really researching things, you know, because there wasn't that much research really back then.
Yeah, that's
you know,
true.
That was the first time that we really, you know, sat down and tasted a bunch of vermouths and realized that, man, that's pretty delicious on its own, you know?
But you're coming out of the dark ages at this point. So,
exactly.
Like, making syrups was a novelty.
Exactly, totally. At Blue Smoke, we had simple syrup. That was it, you know? I mean, we had tons of different liqueurs and all that kind of stuff, but, you know, we were mainly focused on American whiskey. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a barbecue place, you know, and it's jazz,
it's pretty,
you know.
Yeah, it's easy.
So, yeah, I think we had over 50 bourbons, you know, so, and rye.
So it was the ladies who actually got together and started
doing this. Yeah, yeah, and I think it's also because we love to cook, too. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, I mean, there's so much history that... You know, in the last few years has been really coming to light in that so many early cocktail recipes are in old, like, housekeeping books.
Absolutely.
From, like, the 1700s, the 1800s. Because
they were the ones that were the brewers and the distillers. Right? That was part of what your cooking was.
Like,
you know?
Women were making cobblers for a cool day. Or
absolutely.
Had to feed the men folk and their associates and had to provide the cocktails.
Absolutely. And, you know, maybe I just need to test, like, 12 drinks before they get here. So.
Well, the other thing too was my impression of that period of time when the craft thing was getting big was that it was pretty male.
Oh yeah.
There were a couple women here and there.
Oh yeah.
Especially in New York.
Oh yeah, definitely.
But for the most part, it was guys who were getting the spotlight.
They absolutely were. Julie Reiner was the first one to really kind of change that.
Yeah.
Well, and obviously Audrey Saunders too. So I love them both dearly. And I remember when Audrey Saunders came into Blue Smoke, I was like, oh, I was like really nervous around her and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, now we're friends, you know. But, yeah, I mean, it really was, the focus was male-oriented.
Yeah.
And luckily that's changed a good bit.
Were you, when you guys were making these syrups and exploring, like educating yourself, were you aware of that? Were you guys wanting to put a little stamp in? You know what?
A little bit. I think that's why we called it the broad palette, you know?
Yeah.
So, but it was, and we were just trying to make a stamp on our own anyway, you know? Because, you know, had fantasies of opening our own bar, the whole nine.
Everybody does,
and
yeah,
it was just harder to get known and be as appealing to investors and stuff like that too. So
yeah,
that was just the time, you know.
So where'd you go after that? Like, where did
so
you go
after that? I was at Blue Smoke and Jazz Standard for 4.5 years, and then my husband and I came down here on a toss away weekend in New Orleans. And I think we knew in the yeah, this is a land of the never lefts. I had gotten accepted to be in the CAP program at Tails.
Oh yeah,
and that was the first year they did the CAP program, and that was with Joaquin Simo and Alex Day from Death and Company and Don Lee from PDT and Phil Ward and all that, and Chris Hanna, you know, the little brother I never wanted, and me and Rhiannon works with me now at Palm and Pine, and I'm looking around like, how did I get here with these guys, you know? And it was only like 10 of us,
yeah,
and we didn't even have a Sunkist juicer.
Oh, God.
So we were hand squeezing
for all those.
We did. I think it was something like 30 cases each of lemons and limes a day.
Oh,
I'm surprised I have skin anymore.
I was going to say, did you get rot around your fingernails? You guys have
I don't know how I didn't get bar rot, and because we would go through so many of those latex gloves.
Yeah.
It would just eat through it and all that.
Oh,
and then Gary Regan would come in and ply us with more bottles of Rittenhouse.
Right.
And that's also where I met the bum. So the bum and Martin Kate were doing Tales of the Tiki, which is why I'm blaming them for a lot of the lime juice. But,
I think that's appropriate.
But, those poor guys were making like tons and tons and tons of Navy Grog cones out of snow cone paper cups and stuff, and which is one of the reasons why Bum came up with the Navy Grog cone maker
that he has.
He's like, I don't want to do that shit again, you know?
I'm kind of mad at him for putting you guys through that. I mean,
well, we didn't know how big it was going to be. That was the first year, and it just went gangbusters. And now, and so I did the CAP program like 6 years, I think, because I'm a glutton for punishment, but...
Well,
I like the back of the house stuff.
I was gonna say, but you still do this kind of thing because I know of you because of the Hinky Lao,
mm-hmm.
and because you do back of house at Hinky,
yep.
which is also a lot of work.
A lot of work.
You know, the Hinky Lao being one of a few tiki conventions, basically
uh-huh.
this one in Florida. So I'm assuming you probably see your family or something
yeah.
down there.
Yeah.
But over the years, that has just gotten bigger and bigger, and there will be how many bars represented there? And
so many bars represented, and the parties get bigger, and it's involving the bands, and more people are home cocktailians, and so they're interested too. So they come to Tales and Tiki Oasis and Hooky Lao and the Vegas bar show. They all want to be involved too. Which I think is making it part of the fun. It's like,
that's how I started. I was a cocktail enthusiast, as
right.
the Tales folks like to put it. I mean, I was living in the Bay Area, and when it started to turn, like, you know, late 2000s, all that, mm-hmm. and I realized I do like a nicely made cocktail.
Yeah.
But to me, it's like having a good dessert.
I think it's just kind of more of that fallout from people's fascination with Food Network when they showed how to make food. They don't do that anymore. But, but people were really interested. It's like when Food Network first started, you wouldn't imagine seeing an asparagus risotto in a Target.
I know, right?
You know? I mean, and so it was a matter of time before that really went on.
Yeah.
And to drinks.
And everyone became an expert at making an old-fashioned at home.
Exactly. And also, you know, restaurateurs realized the importance of having the bar, and having a good bar honors the food.
Yeah.
You know, I've always been restaurant-specific, and And I always say, you know, I'm a bar for the restaurant. It's not a restaurant for the bar, you know? It's like, it has to make sense for them. And also the back and forth is really great. I would feel like there's a limb missing if it was just a bar
for me.
It was
just a plain old bar.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, well, going back to you being behind house and everything, that's like, yeah, you are a glutton for punishment.
I am.
I mean, that Wookiee Lab thing, that's tons and tons of work, and you don't even get to come out.
No.
You're, like, literally locked away in a back room.
Yes.
Until, like, 10 o'clock at night, and then you can go sit in the pool or something.
Yeah, or sit in the ocean at 2 o'clock in the morning, you know?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, the only time we get to relax is get our tattoos on the last day, you know? So, which is even more pain, you know?
Well, I mean, so you do that, and you started here, you were doing the Tales stuff, but then you continued working at bars here, and have you always worked in the French Quarter as well?
No, okay. I did work.
The French Quarter is a different kind of animal.
It's a different kind of animal. I started off in the French Quarter. My first job here was actually at Molly's on the Market.
Oh, wow.
So I was the day girl at Molly's, which is the town hall for the drunks, which was a great first job here, you know, because then you really get the lay of the land and how the city really works.
Uh-huh.
So I'm really, really grateful for that. And then I was given my first bar program in a place ironically called Clever, because it did not last very long. It was connected to a wine bar, so it was all based on wine-based ingredients, cognacs, things like that.
I mean, sherry, everybody loves sherry in their cocktails these days.
Absolutely. And then I can't remember exactly where I worked then, but I worked uptown for a little bit, and then I worked at Three Muses on Frenchman for 3 or 4 years, something like that, and we opened up a second one that just was in the wrong location, and after that, I got the opportunity to work at Latitude, and then went over to, which I adored, and I love Bowman and Eden more than anything. And then
Latitude's pretty magical.
It is, and that is the most difficult bartending I've ever done in my life.
Sure,
but
you know, tiki drinks.
I learned so much, and I have zero regrets. I loved every second of it.
I mean, that's the manifestation of a dream.
Yeah,
there.
And it was a great soundtrack. So
yeah, totally. Yeah, always
all
good.
That killer Exotica. It was really, really well curated. And then I worked at Justine, going back to my little French-loving roots. And then the world exploded. And
so weird. So what were you doing with yourself during the pandemic?
Doing a lot of cross-stitch. I'm such an old lady when I'm at home. It's like, I cook for my husband, I play with the cat, and do cross-stitch. I mean, it's pretty.
So
it's,
was it a nice
But then I did a cross stitch for Lemmy for a friend of mine. So okay. I mean it's interesting cross stitch.
So you weren't bartending for like a year.
I mean, I've been working since I was 13, you know?
So was that weird?
I hated it.
Because there are some people who are like, oh, it was kind of nice having that break.
It was nice for like a month, and then I'm like, I miss people. I miss, you know.
Yeah. And I miss that interaction. New Orleans got hit real hard at the beginning of the pandemic,
Yeah,
too.
We did, you know. And
it was like, you know, you guys were like Italy, all locked in your homes, waving, you know, from your balconies to each other.
And I lived in the quarter, so my paranoia level was woohoo.
Yeah,
because you'd have people coming in from Texas and Florida, not giving a damn, you know.
Yeah, you can totally swear on this.
Yeah.
And then you come in, and you're just like, yeah, keep your germs over there.
No, you keep your Florida over there. You know,
I'd be like, I left there. I
exactly.
Left there.
Yeah, I'm from Florida, but you keep it over there. Yeah. So. No.
So when the world opened back up again, that's when you wound up at Paul.
I got lucky. I saw that they were looking, and they gave
me a
call,
space.
And I love it. And
I love that space.
The chefs are so talented. The chef owner couple, it's Morris and Jordan, and they can cook, and the entire team can.
It's delicious.
And they really let them explore and get creative as well.
Well, the drinks are not too shabby either.
Yeah, you might have had
a little something to do with that.
Yeah, maybe. So
this will take me into the music part, because when I was there just the other night, I'm like, oh wait, there's like three drinks here that are musically inclined or something.
Yeah.
Gene Persimmons.
Yeah.
I remember one of the non-alcoholic drinks is that first Madonna album.
Yep.
Is that what it's called?
Yep, that first Madonna album. And Bones, Thugs, and Harmony.
That's right.
Because I made a corn cob syrup. So
I was going to say, what is that? Because I've learned that I love corn in cocktails.
Yeah, it's great.
You know, it's just corn. There's that corn liqueur that's out, that mixta stuff. That's super delicious.
And then you have Vago Elote, which is really great.
Yes, which is super yummy. Super yummy. And I went somewhere in Vegas where the women did a popcorn-infused mezcal.
Oh, I believe it.
Popcorn is my favorite thing in the world.
I love popcorn. I was on keto for like a year, and not being able to have popcorn or rice.
Honestly,
what was I thinking? It's like I lost weight, but I'm like, I don't care.
I can't live without popcorn.
No.
It's like, my husband's like, we should try the keto thing. He's like skinny as a rail, and I'm
my husband, too. I'm like, come on, dude.
Yeah. Those guys suck.
I know.
And they're just like, I'll do it with you, and like, I really appreciate the encouragement and everything, but I cannot live without popcorn.
Yeah, yeah.
Corn is a big deal.
I did it for a while, and then I'm like, no, I can't.
So I got to know how you came up with those names.
Yeah.
Like, you must be a music person.
Jordan, I am a music person, but Jordan helps me with the names more than anything else. So,
and Jordan is tall, skinny?
No. Jordan is one of the chef owners. He's great with the names.
Okay.
So he's a funny, funny dude.
Because, when I do this, we got to talk about music, but I always ask, hey, have you ever named a cocktail after a song lyric or whatever? And
a lot of times.
We've just got that menu right there. And
right there.
Three right there. And I'm like, yeah, she's in there.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a lot easier, actually. It's like, they've already done the work for you, you know? I mean... So a lot of them, and we always cater a lot, with the playlist. It's like, what are we feeling today, guys? It's very, to keep everybody's spirits up and also to keep the vibe going in the room.
Totally.
It's really important.
Well, of those three.
At Blue Smoke, we had the same playlist for 4.5 years.
Oh, my God. Oh, well, that's because it was a jazz place?
It was, but it wasn't, but it was, the jazz
club. Not saying that's an excuse.
No, the jazz club was downstairs. Upstairs was barbecue. So it was, they ruined Bill Withers for me.
I have been in that position.
Oh.
I have been in that position. Where
I can't hear Lovely Day anymore.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
I know.
I understand, and I'm so sorry.
Damn you, Danny Meyer.
Right. So of those three drinks, we got your G. Persimmons, so there's Kiss. We got Bone Thugs Harmony, and we got Madonna.
Yeah.
So which of those artists... Which one's your favorite of those three?
That's really tough. So I think they all speak to different parts of my life.
Oh, I need to hear that.
I grew up in the 70s, so me and my best friend Missy would actually play upstairs in the pool table room. We would play Night on Disco Mountain from Saturday Night Fever. It's like dun 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 dun. And
that's
pretend.
A good Halloween song.
It is. It is a good Halloween song. And we would pretend that Kiss was saving us from bad people. That is the most 70s thing possible. Everybody says she's looking good. And the lady knows it's understood. Strut up.
Paradise.
Oh, Phantom of the Paradise, but also Kiss had a movie called Kiss Meets the Phantom.
Kiss Meets the Phantom. That's actually where I was going.
Yep.
Because I'm like, wait, Kiss wasn't in Phantom of the Paradise. I'm getting my Phantoms mixed up.
Yep.
Okay.
But same time period,
So all of it
was cocaine-driven, terrible movies,
That we really need to watch now.
Totally, they're amazing.
I'll go to our bar and be like, can you play this one tonight?
Oh, yeah. Ace Frehley had one line in the entire thing, and it was just a noise. He was that messed up during the entire thing. So,
which member of Kiss was rescuing you?
Ace Frehley was my favorite. Then he took the makeup off. I'm like,
they all took the makeup off.
Whoa, let's not do that. Yeah. I remember getting that Tiger Beat. It's like Kiss Unmasked, and I was so excited. I was like, I didn't.
You're like, everything just changed.
But I also didn't know that the Village People were gay when I was a kid.
Same.
And I had a crush on the construction worker, So.
It could have been the leather guy.
Yeah, it could have been the leather guy.
Random leather guy.
Yeah, either way.
It's like, what job is that?
Yeah, either way, my gaydar was way off from the very beginning. So.
Tiger Beat.
Tiger Beat.
All
of
my Sean Cassidy stuff.
I went and I saw Sean Cassidy.
Did you see him this year?
No, when I was a kid.
Oh.
When I was a kid.
I did not. I'm very jealous because he just came around this year.
No way.
He did a show in LA and somebody told me about it like 3 months in advance. My job has been such.
Oh my God.
That I was
that's
like,
hilarious.
I was not able to get a ticket. And then she's posting video from it. And I'm like, just don't. If you post him singing Hey Dini, I will die.
I will die. I just can't. I just can't. I remember.
Well, what was your first concert? Sean Cassidy is pretty early.
That was really early. So technically, it was an outdoor concert. And I remember sitting on Dad's shoulders. It was Peaches and Herb.
So, and, were you singing along?
Oh, yeah.
I know, right?
And,
it always feels so good.
Exactly. And then Sean Cassidy, and then the one that was the most embarrassing for me was...
None of these are embarrassing.
The Bee Gees.
Why is that embarrassing?
Well, I should have known because it was the Tragedy Tour. That should have been foreshadowing for me. So I was in love with Barry Gibb because of the glorious hair. I mean, who
glorious
wasn't?
Glorious beard, glorious hair.
Tight pants. You, it was
now,
perfect,
I don't
you know?
Know if you felt this way when you were young. And it may just be that I grew up with a tall, skinny dad with no body hair.
Right, right.
But I was slightly intimidated as a little girl by the Bee Gees because they were so hairy.
They were hairy dudes.
And I did not understand. It was like, yeah. It was threatening to me, like these hairy men. I like the music, but I'm like, they're so hairy. They're like these men. And I was too young.
I was so in love.
To understand my feelings.
Oh,
you
yes.
Know? It's like, I don't have those feelings anymore. You
right.
By the time I was like a little
older.
Well,
when you're a kid, you don't really, don't, how does this happen?
You can't yeah. process what you're feeling exactly.
No.
You know? But he did have the best hair, all of them, and just.
Oh, yeah. And that voice and all that. And
my mom used to hate it because she's like, they sound like goats.
She's not far off.
And I was like, well, they didn't always sing like that. As I got older and learned that he yeah. adopted that falsetto.
Exactly.
But yes, yeah. So right. So you went and saw the Tragedy Tour, but come on.
So, okay,
Tragedy.
So speaking of popcorn, my little 10-year-old rotund self ate way too much popcorn way too quickly. And then they opened up the concert with Tragedy, and they go, Tragedy! And these big explosions happen, and I projectile vomited all over this bald dude in front
oh,
of me.
No.
And I was with my friend Dorian and her dad. They're horrified.
Oh,
I'm horrified.
No.
I'm crying through the entire concert. Oh, the guy no. in front of me is pissed.
Oh,
it was,
no.
I'm like, Barry Gibb's never going to love me, which became true.
Well, was, Barry Gibb moved to Florida.
Yeah, it's
Were
true.
Were you still in Florida? When
you know what? I don't know.
No. He's still there as far as I know.
Unrequited love. Yeah. Unrequited.
Did this love of music way back that when ever inspire you to try to play? Because I know I did.
I was a musical theater major. So
you were a musical theater.
Yeah.
Okay, you said theater at one.
Yeah, and I was trained theater. In opera in high school.
Oh,
so,
really?
Yeah, and I was in a show choir. The Madrigals, get it? Madrigals, Madrigals. Oh, God.
Yep. And I've actually heard it before.
Yep, I'm sure.
A Chicago, like, girl at, in Chicago school that did Madrigals.
Yep, when we did.
Fair.
It was a all-girls high school, and so we did Gilbert and Sullivan's every year and all that. So I was definitely very musical, and all through high school I was a really lame poser goth, you know?
So did that mean that you weren't allowed to be a musical nerd anymore? Because you
oh,
were
no.
too gothy for it?
No, I was there. I
okay,
mean,
it just meant your favorite was Sweeney Todd now.
Oh, right? yeah, Sweeney Todd. Oh, God, I loved that one. Yeah, definitely. But all the music I listened to, it was, you know, it was all new wave.
Well, yeah, we were all in the
that.
Age bracket.
Exactly.
So.
You know, I wanted to be Susie Sue. You know.
I did Susie for an 80s party. I threw
you
at
could totally pull that look off.
I'm a little too yellow.
Yeah,
so
maybe,
it's hard to get the white
right.
there, but I can do the eyebrows.
Well, you've got the brows, exactly.
I can do the eyebrows, and I had really long hair, so
yep.
I was able to do the, like, you know,
yep.
just do this.
Yep.
My best friend did Robert Smith, so we were able to rock
right.
that look for a night, you know?
Yeah.
Yep. But, well, like you, it's hard to be a goth in Florida. It's hard to be a goth in Southern California.
Yeah.
You can do it.
Well,
never
Tampa, you can be goth. So that was like goth central for a long time. But when you're at a, you know, all-girls prep school in Jacksonville, not really, you
well,
know. I can't tell you how many times I was sent home on the extreme fad clause. My mom would have to come pick me up and all the time.
Well, okay, so I was brought up on musicals too. My mom, well, you said brought up and you loved them. My mom was a ballerina in South America.
Oh, wow.
And so when she came here, the theater stuff was, none of us did it, but we had that artistic
You were rounded.
We were rounded enough, and my dad's like, whatever, he's a science teacher. Oh, yeah, just play the stuff. He loved musicals too.
Right.
So somehow we loved all this other stuff, but if you liked, if you were a musical theater person, you've got to have some favorite musicals.
Oh, yeah.
And since I don't stumble across us nerds that often when I'm doing these podcasts, what are your go-tos?
I'm a Fosse girl, so, you know, a Cabaret, Sweet Charity.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, this is so good.
Yeah. And also, my turnout sucks, so Fosse musicals are better for me.
Yeah. I'm like, I can't dance. My mom could. She well, actually.
I'm an actor that moves well. I'm not a dancer. So,
yes.
Yeah.
I can move. Yeah. I'm sure I could get trained, but I was too rebellious.
I hated point with a screaming fighting passion.
You can watch horror movies about ballet, but you cannot do ballet. Yeah.
Exactly.
That's not my jam either. Those are beautiful ones, though. I love the Fosse stuff.
I love the Fosse stuff. I like the darker ones. I'm not much into like the Rodgers and Hammerstein type of thing.
See, my dad is an Oklahoma guy. I'm a West Side Story girl.
There's an Oklahoma production now that has made people leave, and like they're throwing up leaving. They're like horrified by it.
It happened in LA.
Now I have to see it.
It just came through LA, and I knew so many people who went and all hated it. Not a single person gave it a break at all. Gays, straights, anybody.
Interesting.
All went, all hated it. And I was like, wow, I've never seen something so universally reviled.
Yeah.
Like,
I'm like, I almost stayed to tell. I'm like, what'd you do? I don't have that much of a reaction.
Yeah, seriously.
That's just crazy.
Just being like, wow, did not like it at all. This point. I'm like, you know, but my dad is, he's one of these wholesome white guys. Who's,
right.
Oh, what a beautiful morning guy, which I know is no
good. But
it's, you know, that's his style.
Well, I mean, the music in, you know, West Side Story is great and stuff like that, too. Yeah. You know,
I love West Side Story. I made my husband watch it, and I'm like, I made him watch the original version because he knew he was going to be forced to see the new version too. So he knew I had to.
I still haven't seen it.
Yeah, and I was just like, I'm like, you need to watch this because you just need to watch it. There's a lot that goes on. It's kind of a bummer.
Right.
But people don't think it's a bummer because it's like the most popular musical. But
really, Romeo and Juliet, everyone dies.
Everybody dies. And there's all this like, oh, you spick kind of stuff. And I'm it meant a lot to me as a Latin kid hearing somebody voicing this kind of stuff. So, you know, I'm like, you got to understand this. And he's like, you know, Irish descent and all that. And he's like, whoa, this is kind of heavy. I'm like, it is.
It is.
But it's still West Side Story. So,
exactly.
But yeah, no, there are tons of them out there. Do you ever catch any of the new ones when they pass through?
So actually, a few of us from Palm and Pine went to go see Cats.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, we did.
Had you seen that before?
I had.
I figured you must have.
Well, my dad took me on a trip in New York.
Were you on shrooms when you went to see?
No, that time, and I should have been.
Yeah.
But I saw Cats when I was 16. Dad, 16? No.
Yeah, it's been around
something
forever.
Like that. Long for exactly.
A lot of time.
Exactly. Dad took me to a trip to New York, and we had seen Cats. I think he just really liked all the unitards.
Yeah. Well, the dancers are great in that.
They are. And the thing is, you know, for musicals like that, they're really fun to, you know, make fun of and stuff like that. But for a little kid to watch that type of magical, they're not going to come and watch you do something experimental or Shakespeare unless they find that magical to the theater first.
That's true.
So
that's a good
point. I think there's an absolute place for that, to, you know, Beauty and the Beast and all that on stage. There's a reason for that, to get those kids to see that wonder.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
Yeah, when I first saw Penny when I was a kid, that's when I realized, first of all, that I wanted to be an actress, and then of course, you know, we did a production of Annie in, you know, sixth grade, and everybody wanted to be an orphan.
Yeah.
Everybody wanted to be Annie. I wanted to be Miss Hannigan.
Nice.
Because I realized at the very end, when everybody was clapping, and all that, they clap for the dog. Wah! Yeah. For Annie. Ah! when Miss Hannigan came out, they lost their minds, and it's because she made them laugh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's probably where my obsession with having red hair and being and my hatred of children. I'm kidding. I'm actually really good with kids.
I'm really good with kids too. And
I just don't want them.
I don't need them. Exactly.
Yeah. I'll be the crazy aunt. I'm fine with that. You know, I'll be Auntie Mame. No problem.
That's a good aunt to be.
Exactly.
Very good. Was there ever a role that you wanted, that you aspired to?
Tamara in Titus Andronicus.
Oh, wow.
I've always wanted to play her.
That's a heavy one.
Yeah, exactly.
Say, speaking of heavy, my God. Wow.
I've always wanted to play her.
Well, so. you're like, I mean, when was the last time you were on stage? I know you've got your stage
it's been a minute, yeah.
But do you ever get out to karaoke or something so you can still bust
every now and then I have to scratch that itch.
What's the karaoke song?
Big Spender.
Go right back to the posse.
Yeah, I either do Big Spender or Cabaret.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that's so wonderful.
Or I Hate Myself for Loving You by Joan Jett.
Oh, that's always good. Mine's always Suffragette City because it's really easy to yell.
That was a good one.
Depending on the mood, like yelling is really fun to do instead
this
of
is
actually
very true.
Trying to sing.
Yeah.
You know, depending on who's in there. I love going, you know, where our bar is downtown in L.A. is Little Tokyo, so we've got some really authentic Japanese bars. And I love when you see the authentic karaoke, how emotional and heartfelt people are when they're doing it. And I feel bad for being like that American kid that's like screaming into the mic.
Exactly. I've just had 20 beers.
Yeah, totally. I'm like, you know, it's what it is.
Well, I did summer stock in the great metropolis of Okoboji, Iowa.
Oh, my God.
For two summers. And there was a karaoke bar across the street from the theater. And boy, was that town grateful when the theater kids came in. Because they've heard, you know, Farmer Joe singing the same damn song for 9 months. So. And here comes everybody.
So great. So has your love of musical theater made its way to the bar for you in any way? Like, has it turned up in your drinks somehow?
No, not really. You know,
it's a bit of a crossover, but you never know.
Yeah, I don't really sing behind the bar or any of that kind of stuff. It's like I usually have to be wasted in another bar to do all
that. So you just keep your pop music culture knowledge for use with the drink beverages.
Absolutely.
Do you remember like what one of the early cocktails was that you got to name after like some musical thing you like?
God, I wish I could remember.
I've made so many cocktails
over the years.
What was one of your early like inventions? Do you remember like one of the first times you were like, yes, I've just killed it with this drink?
I'm sure it was probably an old fashioned variation. God, I've been so many. There was I was telling you earlier, the one that I'm proudest of and one of my cohorts hates me for the most.
Oh, yeah.
Is I don't know what I was thinking.
It's like, I do still kind of want to try this despite my aversion to goats.
It was so good.
But you got to describe it, though.
Yeah, but cost-wise and time-wise and frustration-wise, it was not the best idea. I thought nobody was going to buy it, and it ended up being the bestseller, and it was a Ramos Gin Fizz variation, and it was using honey instead of sugar. It was using gin, lemon, no lime, goat milk, egg white, of course, a little bit of lavender and orange flower water, and thyme. And God, it was delicious, but what a pain.
Everything but the goat milk would have sold me on that.
Well, you grew up with goats.
That's because I grew up with
exactly.
goats. I grew up with too much of that. However, I probably feel like I would have made an exception.
Yeah.
Because I'd be like, you know, because I do that to myself.
I've
had, like, clarified punches where they used goat milk.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, you went through
all
the trouble
right,
of clarifying. I'm going to try it.
Yeah.
I'm going to see if it's...
Because clarifying can be gross.
Yeah. I'm going to see what happens. I'm always going to try it.
Yeah.
There's clarifying. Now it's all clarifying.
It's delicious,
but making it is a pain. It took you 3 days to make this?
Yeah,
okay,
exactly.
Then I'll try it.
Absolutely.
Okay,
so, absolutely.
That is too funny. All right. Well, this is probably a good place to wrap it on your goat milk.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like...
goats, Baphomet, you know, goths, you know. And all ties in.
It does.
Thanks for the dramatic, a bunch of pain.
This is why you have red hair. You say it's Annie, but it's actually the devil within.
It's very true.
Yeah.
A friend of mine who has red hair, she was picking it. She was a musician,
yeah.
And she was actually picking up stuff for her vintage shop.
Mm-hmm.
And she was in this flea market, and this lady was being really ugly to her. And who was running the booth,
yeah.
And she's like, I'm sorry, you know, because she's a sweet Southern girl. She's like, I'm sorry, you know, did I say something to offend you? If I did, I really apologize. She just looked at her, she said, red hair is God's warning.
And you were like, that means I'm keeping my red hair till the end of time.
You got it. Fine.
Awesome. All right, well, if you want to tell people, like, where they can find you.
Yeah.
There's Instagram links you want to share or websites or any of that business, now is the time.
Yeah, so we are at, we all are. I'm Kimberly Patton Bragg. I'm over at Almond Pine, which is on Rampart Street and the French Quarter. So
yeah.
Come see us.
So there's that. And all the Instagram, you can just find it that way.
Yep, absolutely. We're all over the place.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
So good you're doing
yeah,
it.
It's so good to see you again, honey.
See, you were a man of distinction, a real big spender, good looking, so refined. Say, wouldn't you like to know what's going on in my mind? So let me get right.
Big, big, big thanks again to Kimberly Patton Bragg. Thank you so much for chatting with me, KPB. It was great having a burger with you at Port-A-Call. But, you know, the rest of you, you may not get that chance, but you can certainly have a drink with her if you visit Palm and Pine in New Orleans, Palm and Pine Nola being the Instagram handle. Definitely go by there. Definitely check it out. And definitely say hi to KPB. Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you by The Mermaid, a cozy neighborhood bar with an aquatic flair in the Little Tokyo area of downtown LA. Open 7 days a week, featuring tropical cocktails and snacks, The Mermaid also has a daily happy hour from 5 to 8 p.m. Follow The Mermaid on Instagram at TheMermaidLA to hear about upcoming events and check them out at TheMermaidLA.com. Head to 428 East 2nd Street, Los Angeles, for a drink. Thank you for tuning in to our barroom chats on Music and Booze with Mo. For more info about today's guest, or if you want to connect with me, check out my Facebook page, Mo Herms. Please subscribe to the podcast and feel free to tell all your friends about it. While you're there, give the show a rating and a review. It really helps to get the word out. If you want to hear the playlists our guests have curated, search She Be Mo on Spotify, S-H-E-B-M-O. Find pictures of the interviewees and the cool stuff they create on the Music and Booze with Mo Instagram account. Lower your expectations and join us at the bar. Till next time, cheers.